And Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a 4-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Thursday morning of Travers Week. It is another gorgeous day here in Saratoga, live from our clear court set. And again, we're leading into Travers on Saturday, New York Bred Day tomorrow. Really a great few days of racing up here at Saratoga with great weather to boot. Coming up a little bit later on the show, we'll be joined by Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum. Thursday means a regular visit from either Dave Grenig or Mike Welch. Mike Welch in the rotation today, and we'll take a look ahead to some of the stakes action coming up on Saturday, the Travers and beyond. A little bit later, the tape piece that I did Tuesday night at the TRF charity event out at the Saratoga Winery, the barbecue at the barn. We'll get that going for you a little bit later in the show. But top of the show, really happy to be joined by trainer Todd Pletcher, having a very good Saratoga meet. He's got some horses coming up here and beyond. We'll touch on all that. Todd, good morning.
Morning.
Happy to have you on board to talk a little bit. And I wanted to start out because I had Al Stalin yesterday. We had Tommy Amos on. Going back to Tommy Amos after his kind of milestone career victory, and you're over 5,300 wins. I always like to ask trainers, you remember the first one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the first one, Majestic Number at Gulfstream, maiden 75 claim, and actually she came back and won a one at the Van after that. So, yeah, that one for sure you always remember.
Yeah, it seems like every trainer has that one indelibly.
And we were remarking that. I think the story goes with Bill Mott. He dead-heated for his first one, and it was at a small track, and there was like a blanket something for the prize or something. They had to flip a coin, and he won it. And for Tom Amos, he told the story. What he got out of it was the guy protected his parking spot at the motel that he was staying in Chicago at Hawthorne.
And he gave out the winner in the hotel that they were
Now, here's if you remember rate. This, and when Seth told me you were coming on, I said, do you remember the first time your name appeared in the program?
I can't remember back in those days as an assistant for Wayne. I think sometimes
because I think Harvey Pack had you on the show, whether
they
day of or
the,
something.
The name, the assistant's name, in parentheses. Yeah. That was probably the first time. I think the first horse that I ran was a horse named Paramount that I think finished fifth or sixth, and so that was the first time it appeared as a trainer.
Another question I asked Al, and when he was in here, we were talking for some reason about the paddock, and I said, you know, I've never asked this to people before. I always ask about trainers who have been at many tracks like you have around the country and beyond, but I never asked about the paddock before, and I'm a Saratoga guy, and I love the Saratoga paddock. How would you compare the Saratoga paddock to other tracks?
I'd say it's most similar to the one at Keeneland.
That's what Al said, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, because you have the open area, you can saddle around the trees, or you can go inside the stalls. It's a similar makeup to that.
Is it, comparatively speaking, a nice paddock for a trainer to saddle?
Yeah, I think overall it is. You know, there's a pretty big crowd around it, and I think, you know, some horses will react a little bit differently to that. But you know, and then you've got Gulfstream, which is worst. But I mean, it's just so consolidated and so tight, and there's really no room for not only the horses and trainers and people that have to be in there, but, you know, there's absolutely no room for owners or anyone else to be in there, you know, in the saddling enclosure anyways. Yeah. Once you get out on the walking ring, it's a little better.
Remember the days of no fence up here, speaking of fence?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. The some of the things that we used to do. You know, it's amazing. More bad things haven't happened.
That's the part that I tell people. I said, we think of it romantically, which is nice. I've told the story about Mom's Command. She had won the Triple Crown. She was up here, the Philly Triple Crown. She's up here for the test. And I brought my girlfriend and friends out. And I'm like, you know, if you're a moron, you could have touched her hind. And I was like, then they brought the paddock. And you're like, boy, that was a lucky 80 years to get through, you know, situations like that. Now, I remember the first time we met was Criminal Type. But I don't think that was your first summer up here. Was it 1990?
No, 89 was my first.
The year before,
yeah,
okay.
That was my first summer up here. Some of the highlights, Open Mind won the Alabama and the Slop.
Last
came
the first.
Out of the Clouds.
Yeah,
and,
Angel,
yep,
the 8
yeah.
path.
And then Stella Madrid, I think, won the Spinaway, also with Angel. And yeah, I remember that, like how focused Angel was on trying to win the meet. And like, I think maybe Stella Madrid sewed it up, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty good early. I think
something of Saratoga.
I think she did. She beat Gopher Wand in the Frisette.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
pretty good. Just put that on the.
That's lifetime. a good
I
recall.
Beat Gopher Wand.
Good recall, yeah. And then of course Gopher Wand won the.
Yeah.
Phillies.
I talked about the paddock. I'd like to talk about your barn as well. You're over on the Oklahoma side. How long have you been over there? And it seems like a lot of trainers get that place, then it's home for a long time.
Yeah. So my first year training here would have been 96, and we were in a barn on the main track side, and then in 97 we went to that barn 62 on the Oklahoma side, and have been there ever since.
Now, do you know who previously had the barn?
I don't recall that.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
But it is like home then if you've been over there though.
Yeah, I mean it's been a and it you know, once you get kind of into a routine it's
and Wayne had been over there, so were you always kind of thinking you were wishing to get over there, that if the opportunity came?
Yeah, I think part of the reason, like, we didn't have that many horses the first year we came up, so we went into this side, but then the next year we had some horses training up here during the summer, so it made it easier to be over on the Oklahoma side.
And how do you like training over in the Oklahoma?
To be honest with you, we don't train that much over there during the meet. You know, we also have horses on the harness track, so it makes it easy for us to kind of coordinate things so that we
cross
meet
over here in the morning.
We can meet with the horses coming from the Oklahoma. That way we can watch them all train at the same time.
Well, now I'll ask you, if you have horses over at the harness track, I ask a lot of trainers, do you ever work out over here on clear court?
We will occasionally gallop a horse on clear court, but sometimes we found that a horse that gets a little too aggressive on the main track might relax a little bit over there, but not much.
That's what I've heard. It's kind of a mental thing out there, just because it's so different back
here. It's just a little different setting. I think sometimes horses will associate going to the main track with breezing or racing and get a little more competitive, but it's an option.
Let's pull up. We'll do a little review and a little preview as well, but obviously one of the highlights of the meet, a horse is going to go down. It's, you know, if not the horse, one of the horses of the meet, Nest, with the coaching club American Oaks, and we'll look back last weekend to the stretch run of the Alabama. Nest is going to be the number 4. Wayne Lucas with Secret Oath runs second. In here, the number 7. Your other horse, Goddess of Fire, runs third, the number 2. Alabama last weekend, and how she has now kind of really risen to the top of this 3-year-old filly class.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can, as you see here in the replay, when Irad asked her to go at the top of the stretch, you could visually just see her lower down to another gear and accelerate. It's amazing that, you know, after going along for 7/8 of a mile, that she can just accelerate like that. And so it's a huge effort for us. The only really kind of a little bit of nervous moment for me was when she kind of left the gate in a little bit of a tangle, but then Irad was able to recover and get right to that position that we wanted, and you know, she was on cruise control from there.
How'd she come out of it, and I'm wondering what's up next, because we talk about it a lot on the handicapping show. It seems like these days it can be Saratoga to the Breeders' Cup. So again, how'd she come out of it, and what's the game plan?
Yeah, she's taken her races remarkably well all year, and the one that really amazed me was the Belmont, that she seemed to come out of it so bounce back so quickly and put on weight, and you know, and that showed in her performance in the coaching club. And then, you know, she did the same thing in between the coaching club and the Alabama, just really bounced out of it in good form, and did that again. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, some possibilities. I think the Beldame or the Spencer on October 9th are most likely, but, you know, we'll remain flexible for a couple of weeks and See how she does.
Now, with horses like Ness, the good ones, did she foreshadow this before the Ashland, or has it been between the Ashland? I mean, did you really start? My point, I guess, is be like in early April, did you start to think she's going good places, or was it?
It was actually a little bit earlier than that this one. I mean, we obviously liked her last year, and you know, I thought she was a little unlucky to lose the Tempted, just kind of got going a little too late, and then bounced back and won the Demoiselle. So we went into the winter thinking, you know, we're targeting the Oaks and just kind of trying to figure out how we were going to get there. Once we decided to go to Tampa for the Suncoast, I remember thinking, you know, this filly's really going the right way.
Okay.
And we were talking about, I remember talking to Aaron Wellman, and you know, there was a little bit of controversy about it was a Lasix race or a no Lasix race, and if you wanted points for the Oaks, you couldn't use Lasix. And so, anyways, we were just having that discussion. I said, look, Aaron, it doesn't matter. You know,
okay,
we'll just run her without Lasix. And you know, some of the other horses run on Lasix. I don't think it matters. So
okay.
She was trained that well leading into that race, and then again came out of it and just kept improving and improving. And so
she's had a very long, steady run of improvement and improvement.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, and you can see it in her physique that she keeps improving. And it's something that we, you know, at this time last year, you know, when she was just getting serious in her training, she was one that we said, you know, look, she's a Curlin, AP Indy mare. She's only going to get better. And, you know, thankfully that's turned out to be
the
case.
Well, I'll ask you from the trainer's point of view, because there was consternation on social media, as there often is, with the buyer number. But, I mean, how much faster was she supposed to go? So was that any concern with you?
No, I mean, look, I mean, the way the race unfolded, the fractions weren't real fast. I mean, I think if you broke the race down into two parts, her last 3/8 of a mile would have been 110 by her figure,
right.
You know, I mean,
so slow fast.
Yeah.
You can only get such a
You can only go as fast as you need to. And in her case, she was in a perfect stalking spot, and Irad never really needed to ride her until, you know, just turning loose at the top of the stretch. So it's one of those things that I don't concern myself too much with. I think it was an impressive race, no matter what the buyer figures out.
And also impressive when we watched the end of that clip there, you saw the people coming out of the stands. We had Mike Rapoli on earlier, and I said, boy, there was a lot of people in the winner's circle for the Coaching Club of American Oaks. He said, wait for the Alabama. It's got to be fun working with Mike, certainly.
It is, and, you know, I mean, part of what makes it fun for him is when he brings his family and friends and, you know, has a big group like that, and something that he enjoys sharing with those people.
I took a picture in the winner's circle. I would have included it, but I don't think you made it. I think you were way over on the left side of the picture. Another one I wanted to show, always fun to watch the two-year-olds up here at Saratoga, and we're going to go back and watch actually, we're looking at a three-year-old here. We'll look at a two-year-old in a moment, but Express Man making the career debut as a three-year-old. And speaking of buyer figures, that's going to be the 1A here, a 111 buyer. And again, this was a three-year-old debut. Talk a little bit about the belated debut and what might be next coming off a huge effort like this.
Yeah, I mean, he's a horse that he needed a little bit of time as a two-year-old. He came in for a little while. We gave him some time off. He got going again. Then he needed another little break when he was at Bruce Jackson's at Fair Hill. So. But once he came in, you know, he was training really well. But to be honest with you, him and his company mate had been working together, and you know, they were always head in head, and we weren't really sure, you know, if there was a lot of difference between the two. So, you know, I think a lot of the action on the entries and, you know, the clockers and stuff were probably banking on the one horse,
yeah.
You
yes.
know, being the one that might do that, but. Really, I mean, when he broke sharply and was just on such a easy cruise control, that it was super impressive, I thought.
Now, I would ask, were you surprised? Was there a level of, we're not considering ourselves a biased figure, but how he performed as an athlete?
I wasn't surprised that he won. I was surprised that he won as
authoritatively beat the other
and
one.
Ran as fast as he did.
Okay.
You know, and as you know, the track has not been fast at this meet, and you kind of when they threw up 122 and four, I said, that's a fast time on this track.
And a 111 for a debut effort, a solid number. What might be next? Do you have any plans for Express?
You know, I think we'll probably go the conservative route and try an allowance race, try to gradually stretch him out a little bit. He gives me the impression from a physical standpoint and the way he ran that you know, he'll handle more distance.
And again, wanted to also take a look at 2-year-old and go back to MoMA. This is August 14th. MoMA's going to be the number 8 horse here. This is a 1/16 on the grass. So I wanted to show this because it's a debut win, but it's also a debut win going 2 turns on the grass here at Saratoga. And I'd love you to talk about MoMA's performance. Oh, this is not correct race.
Looks like Let Her Inspire You.
Oh, yeah, that called that one up because that horse is coming up. But again, MoMA, 2 turns on the grass. I wanted to talk a little bit about her performance, but also from a trainer's perspective, it seems like up here at Saratoga, 2 turns on the grass becomes an option for trainers that maybe are looking more distance than grass necessarily. And I think as handicappers, we often kind of, you know, use the crystal ball and do that. But I'd love to know from a trainer's perspective, when you're debuting the 2 turns on the grass up here at Saratoga, what is the game plan? Is sometimes that the fact?
Well, it could be. In this filly's case, she had done a lot of her training at Monmouth on the dirt, and we felt like she had kind of bottomed out a little bit on the dirt. So we brought her up here and worked her on the turf, and we saw what we wanted to see. You know, she finished much stronger. She galloped out better, and it just seemed like, you know, it was a good fit for her. And she has the body frame. She's a lightly made filly, and just seemed to do better on the grass. And Uncle Mo's such a versatile stallion. He gets runners on pretty much any surface, but his turf stats are solid. So it was really, in her case, about getting her on the grass more so than the distance. And but at the same time, we didn't feel like she was a 5.5 turf horse either.
What is the thought process when you debut a horse 2 turns, either turf or dirt? That has to be...
Well, like in Ness' case, you know, she ran a 1/16 at Belmont first time out because, you know, we knew that she wanted to run long. Now, if there were a mile option around that time, we would have been happy to do that, but sort of from a timing perspective. But really, I mean, you know, with the turf course here, and you can breeze on it, and I think you can kind of get a line and try to identify what these horses want to do before you make a decision on where you're going to run them.
There are some horses coming up, so a little preview as well. You have a Moray in today's Risk Averse. You're going to try the turf with that one. What are the thoughts there?
Same thing. You know, we were a little frustrated by our last effort on the dirt, put her on the grass and thought she worked well. So hopefully she's another Uncle Mo that's going to take to it.
And we just saw Let Her Inspire You. If the guys can pull that replay up again, Let Her Inspire You is going to be the number 8 horse here, an allowance event earlier. I'm going to ask you, as a handicapper, I love this angle. A horse comes back from a layoff, a couple of sprints, and stretches out to 2 turns. That's going to be the game plan for Let Her Inspire You as a trainer. Does that ever figure into your game plan?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't 100% sure if this filly wants to go a 1/8. We're coming off a couple of sprints, but what's impressed me in her training is that she always gallops out really strongly. You know, I think she's probably going to have a pace advantage in here, and so now it's just going to be a matter of, you know, if she'll see out the 1/8. But you know, if she could maybe get lucky and get away with a little bit of an easy first half mile, then I'd be more optimistic.
I have one quick question. I love trainers that especially have as great a run as you've had. Who one or two that has surprised you the most in the afternoon based on what you thought maybe you had going in? Whether the whole career or like 3 or 4 races where you're just really surprised, happily surprised.
Yeah, to be honest, no one jumps out.
Okay.
But I will say there's certain pedigrees that we've seen over the years.
Okay.
And I think Into Mischief's a good example.
Absolutely.
You know, that they might be saving a little something in the morning, and then when they get into that competitive race scenario, or maybe you work them from the gate, you'll see something different. And I remember seeing the same thing with Stormcat when worked for Wayne, that you know, some of those horses would kind of trick you in the mornings, and then when it came,
they had a different gene for the afternoon.
Game time was different. Yeah.
A good gene.
Yeah, I like that. Coming up tomorrow on the funny side, you have Donegal Surge. I like this horse in debut, and it's a fairly quick turnaround. We're going to look at the debut effort going back to August 11th. Give us a thought coming out of the maiden race, and was this the game plan coming out of the win?
Yeah, I mean, you know, assuming that he came out of it in good order, you know, we talked about it actually literally right after the race, that if he bounces back well, that, you know, this is our only option at the meet to run back, you know, against state breds. And I thought that this ended up in the end being a fairly easy win for him, and he showed great energy coming out of it and given us every indication that, you know, we could run him back on relatively short rest. So like the way he did it, and he's one that kind of took a little bit for the light bulb to go on, and then suddenly in his last gate work prior to his debut, it was like, okay, he's figured it out now, you know, he acts like he's ready to go.
Is that a report you get from that exercise rider in the morning? Like, oh,
well, actually, Jose Ortiz worked him that morning.
Okay.
But no, I didn't need to ask Jose. I could see it.
It was visually right there. Also, have to ask you about an out-of-town race, because you have Mind Control entered in the Charlestown Classic on Friday night. We are going to pull up, this was some performance, we're going to pull up the Salvatore Mile, where Mind Control and Hot Rod Charlie just kind of bang it out down the stretch, with Mind Control getting it done. Talk a little bit about the performance. This is just a great effort in the Salvatore Mile, and what the game plan is going on to the Charlestown Classic at the Mile and Eighth.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually, this race that they're showing at Monmouth is the second time that he's done this, where he looked like he was really beaten. He did it in the Parks Mile last fall, and he's just, you know, he's a competitor, and looked like he was almost down a neck there for a second to a really good horse, yeah, in Hot Rod Charlie, and fought back, really it was just about timing, hoping that, you know, I think Charlestown obviously is a tricky track. It's a three turn mile and an eighth, so, you know, he gives us the impression he'll handle that well. I think he's the right body type. It's a $1 million race, and so you know, every reason to try it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple of more before we let you go, because you have Malathat entered in the personal ensign on Saturday up here. We're going to take a look at the Shoe V from earlier in the meet, Clairiere, the number four over Malathat. How's Malathat coming into the Saturday race, and what are your expectations in the personal ensign?
I expect her to run, you know, her A race, which I'm not sure she did in the Shoe V. I was a little concerned at the way she behaved in the paddock that day. She was very dull, and it was a super hot day. I don't think she handled that well, and she's a little lethargic in the post parade. And, you know, to her credit, she still ran a solid second to a very good filly, but we didn't think that was her best performance. And so she's come back, she's trained great, and we're expecting better.
And finally, just before we let you go, there is the SUV, so we'll take a look at that stretch run too. But before we let you go, I'll also have the guys pull up the Dwyer, because I was really looking forward to, I'm sure, yeah, you were too, to Charge It in the Travers. Charge It in the Dwyer, we'll look at in a moment, a 111 buyer figure. And just as I say, I was really intrigued to see what he was going to do this weekend. Fill us in on what the situation was with Charge It not showing up in the Travers, and what is the game plan now going forward with Charge It? This is just a fabulous performance. So again, fill us in on Charge It.
So we came out, we came up with a foot abscess about 5 days ago, and maybe 6 days ago now, but it came at a very inopportune time that compromised us to be able to put his final breeze in. And you know, it did pop, and it's gotten better, but you know, I needed to get a work into him, you know, Saturday, Sunday, yeah, or Monday, and I couldn't do it. He was still feeling the effects of that a little bit, and obviously need to come into a race like this 110%, and especially having had not run since the Dwyer, we needed to get another good breeze into him. So now it's just a matter of letting the hoof heal up, and you know, the Pennsylvania Derby could be possible, but you know, it's 4 weeks from Saturday, and you know, that could come up quickly. So really it's undetermined where his next start will be.
Right.
If we get the foot straightened out in time to make the Pennsylvania Derby the right way, that's what we'll shoot for. But it's really all about just getting the horse right again.
Yeah, as I say, phenomenal performance.
Yeah, very disappointing. I was really looking forward to running him in here.
Todd, really appreciate the visit. Know you're always busy up here, so we appreciate your swinging by and doing a little preview, a little review of some of the action. Great meet so far, so congratulations so far. Good luck going forward.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Trainer Todd Pletcher, all right, in the house. Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum. We'll do some preview of some of the Saturday stakes action with Mike right after this. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTV is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTV TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTV live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTV TV. OTV TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection in one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Thanks to Todd Pletcher for taking the time to come over and have a little chat. Always appreciate that. Always appreciate a visit from Mike Welch of the Daily Racing Forum. Thursday means a visit from either Mike or Dave Grinnig. Always when they're on, like to tout the workout reports. The Daily Racing Forum, just for the daily coverage as well, DRF.com. But the workout reports always give folks a little bit of an edge. I have my workout report right here, ready to go. So again, Mike, appreciate your work. And was there anything notable on the work tab this morning?
First of all, I got to say, tough act to follow, Todd Pletcher. Last
what
time
do you
I
mean? The JV always plays first. The varsity always comes in second.
The last time I was on, it was right after Tom Amos had won his 10,000th race the day before, or whatever it was. So.
Yeah, but we got the People Magazine part of the show out. Now we have the nuts and bolts of betting horses.
Yeah, work tab this morning, anything?
Yeah, I was fairly busy today because of the rain the last 2 days.
Oh, right.
Tuesday and Wednesdays and Thursdays are always fairly quiet, but because we only had about 25 works Tuesday and Wednesday, we had more than usual this morning. But, you know, Saturday and Sundays are, whatever reason, everybody wants to work Saturday and Sunday. The Saturday tabs are usually 250 to 280.
Jeez.
The Sunday tabs are close to 400 because you get 100 on the grass after you finish all the dirt work. So. That's what they want to do. So
now, Mike, is that a modern phenomenon? Is that something you've seen evolve over the last?
It just seems to everybody, you know, that's the days of choice. maybe the Sunday I can understand, because I think a lot of guys want to work Sunday and then give everybody Monday off because there's no racing. You know, Tuesday maybe two. I mean, Tuesday we call racetrack Sunday because it's really the quietest day of them all out there. But yeah, you see a lot of outfits. You know, even if they work Saturday, they'll walk Sunday and Monday maybe, and they can give the help a little bit of a break.
What happens workout-wise Saturday, Travis Day, with the early post time?
Track opens as normal at 5:30. I think it closes at either 8 or 8:30. So, and then it's right straight through. There's no break. So it gives everybody ample time to get at least most of their horses out before the end of the morning. The problem is, you know, if you go that long without a break, track kind of gets a little deep by the end of it. It does now, too. I mean, the break is at 8:15 as it is. So you don't see a lot of works in the last half hour or 45 minutes on a normal basis anyway. And that'll probably be the case
Saturday,
too. I think
you said 2 weeks ago there's just a mad rush after the break.
Every day.
People want to.
Saturday and Sunday, it's crazy. You can't have enough clockers up there. I mean, people should. Everybody should get an opportunity to see what goes on for those 15 minutes. Anybody that's ever critical about, well, how did you miss that work or whatever, come up and see what it's like for those 15
minutes. I'm the opposite. I'm like, how'd you get that work? Missing.
I mean, in the first 10 or 15 minutes, you might get 40 horses working, maybe even, you know, and they all want to go at the same time at different poles. It's tough. And the clock is here and back at Gulfstream where I'm at, Churchill, watching those guys too. I mean, it's amazing that they catch as many as they can, because it's really hard work.
Now, you guys do a great job, you and Dave and the team, up here with the Saratoga Clockers Report. Much appreciated and much tolerated as well. Check it out.
Absolutely.
If you haven't. Before we get to preview, we had Todd on. We talked a little bit about Ness last weekend in the Alabama. Your thoughts on that? You know, another wow performance. And I said to Todd, I asked him, you know, there was some consternation on social media with the buyer number going back, but how much faster was she going to go? I mean, you know, you look at it visually, and she didn't have to do any more. She was well ahead, given what she did. But your thoughts on that story?
Yeah, sometimes you don't need to look at the buyer number. You just need to watch the performance. Yeah. It's also like sometimes a work. You don't need to see the time as much as just watching the way they do it. And, you know, what can you say? I mean, she's the queen of the division right now. You know, a lot of people want to see her start taking on the boys. I think they're making the right choice there. They just stay where they are and stay the course. So the same decision, I think, last year with Latruska. Everybody wanted to see her go into the Breeders' Cup Classic, and they kept her with the distaff, and that turned out didn't work out, but that had nothing to do with she just wasn't doing as well going in there, but it was obviously the right choice at the time. You know, and the choice is left up to a pretty good guy when you get to Todd, and if he says let's keep her with fillies, and that's the way to go.
Yeah. All right, let's look on the weekend, Traverse Day, and get some of your thoughts, and we'll kind of work our way back from the Traverse. I pulled up the Jim Dandy result, Epicenters, and in Tawnyport, early voting in there, and off of this Epicenter, certainly going to take a lot of action on Saturday, but as I say, Zandon comes back also. Rich Strike, the Kentucky Derby winner, is in here, who just continues to work very well, but I'm still looking at that Derby as a complete fluke, and I cannot pull the trigger on Rich Strike. Cyberknife, of course, coming out of the Haskell victory, is going to be the one that to me is most interesting as a challenge to Epicenter. But what are your thoughts in the Traverse?
You know, you can look at this race two ways: as a horse player looking to make some money gambling, or as a fan. And I think most people are going to come into this as sort of both, but to me, I'm looking at this race more as a fan than as a horse player trying to figure out how this one's going to turn out, because it's a great field. It's a well-matched field. The two favorites are the logical favorites here. Epicenter is going to be the favorite off this performance here. You know, beat only a few rivals, but did it impressively off a little bit of early trouble, or maybe more than a little bit of early trouble. And, you know, this is a tougher bunch. It's a bigger field. He's not going to be able to overcome, you know, that kind of a situation again in here probably, but he's certainly a deserving favorite, no doubt about it. And this is a big race for him. In the overall three-year-old picture, looking forward to the Eclipse Award voting, I mean, he has not had a grade one win yet. Cyberknife has had two. If Cyberknife were to win this race and get three up on him, it's going to be pretty tough for Epicenter to come back and win the three-year-old award. So a huge race for him. But Cyberknife, he couldn't be doing any better either. I know he's eked out two hard-fought victories in his last two starts, but this is a horse who's just getting better and better. Of all the horses I've seen work, and I've seen a lot of good works coming into this race, I just visually, I just liked his the best. last week. I know it's a minute flat, and there were some horses that worked faster than he did. But it's just the way he looked, the way he galloped out. It was just perfect to me, and he couldn't be doing better. I actually talked to Brad the morning of the draw, and I said, is there anything you would like from this draw one way or the other? And he said, I'd actually like to be down inside. Well, he couldn't be any more inside than he is from post one. The question is the pace scenario in here, and how is this race going to play out? And I'm going to guess from post one, they're going to ask him to kind of get up in there into that first turn. I don't know who's going to wind up in the lead here. I know Chad really doesn't want to be in front again with early voting. He'd rather have a target, but, you know, he could
Where's
be the
that
speed.
Target?
Yeah, I know. I mean, Zandon is probably going to be close up, and I know he, I mean, obviously he's doing really well. You see the work from Ain't Life Grand went 45-4, which you really don't like to see, and I'm sure his connections weren't too pleased with that, but he did do it very easily, galloped out in 110-1, and did it all on his own, so... You know, maybe it didn't take as much out of him as you thought it might. And maybe off of that work, you know, they try to steal the lead in this one. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And Tripp is going to be obviously extremely important here. As for Rich Strike, you know, he's just a good workhorse. He worked pretty good before the Derby. Yeah. He worked, very well before the Belmont. And his work here was good, too. So, but I agree with you. He's really going to have to show me that he can repeat that Derby effort, and even that might not be good enough to win here, especially, you know, with a probable lack of speed. Zandon is also working well. Chad's over the moon about how he's doing, but he's been beaten three straight times by Epicenter, so he's going to have to find a little more and also work out a bit of a trip from that outside post.
What did Chad say about early voting, though? Coming out of the Gin Dandy, I'm sure they had to be on the fence about showing up.
He was disappointed in the effort. He was on the fence. He said today the owner left it up to him whether to run him or not. If he didn't want to run, he was fine with that. And Chad said the horse is just doing so well, he's decided to go back in here. So we'll see. I mean, he just may wind up on the lead again. I know he'd rather a trip like he had winning the Preakness that day. So, you know, we'll see how this all plays out.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun addition, and as you say, it's an addition that's also, I think, going to be very important as far as the three-year-old Eclipse. A little bit earlier, the Sword Dancer, grade one event on the grass, $750,000. I pulled up the United Nations at AMO for Chad Brown, and Matticat has Hal Cumin on a day or two before this race, and we talked a little bit before the United Nations, talked a little bit about this horse, and then subsequently the win down at Monmouth. We'll take a look at that effort. Adamo's going to be the number one horse in here. I thought off of that, he becomes very intriguing, certainly in here, cross-border, an eight-year-old veteran with over $1 million in the bank, Gufo off a string of triple-digit buyers, Channel Maker, another veteran in the bunch, Tribuven, Rock Emperor for Chad. Boy, this is, again, an intriguing field of turfers in the Sword Dancer. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, you can make a case for almost right. all of them in here. And then you got the question mark in Broom, who was the runner-up in the Breeders' Cup turf. And, you know, I it's hard for me to get a line on that form over there right now. His last race, you know, he was 18-1 in that race, so obviously it was a pretty salty field. But, you know, he comes over here with a pretty good reputation. His only race in the U.S. was about as good as it get. I just left Chad. He's got three very live ones in here. He thought Tribuven, you know, didn't have much of an excuse last time, but he thought he might have bounced a little bit off that big, big run in the Manhattan. You see, he ran a 108 buyer, came back 5 weeks later, ran a 101, but he said he's come out of that one doing really well, and, you know, if he can get away with the right kind of pace. Rock Emperor seems to be rounding back to form, the six-year-old veteran, and he never, you know, seems to run a real bad one unless he catches yielding ground, so Chad will be watching the weather with him. But Adamo of the three is the one I like the best, too. He just looks like a young horse, you know, especially really young compared to most of these old salty veterans in here. He's getting better. His United Nations, like Chad said, we finally got a trip, and he made the most of it, and I could see him moving forward off that effort, too. He's got to, you know, prove he can get a mile and a half. He hasn't been a mile and a half yet, but it doesn't look like that should be an issue. So all the Chads, you know, if I put a gun to my head, if I had to make a play in here, it would probably be Adamo. But, you know, look, Clemente has two good ones, too, and Gufo. They're going to make an equipment change. They're going to put blinkers back on. I guess they want to keep him a little closer to the pace. So we'll see how that works out. You know, he's the defending champion here, so, and he seems, you know, at his best, is as good as any of these two. So, terrific race.
Yeah,
terrific.
Yeah,
again, another race as a fan. Terrific race to watch. You might get rewarded as a better in here because,
right.
I think that race offers both. The fans going to get rewarded, and the bettors are going to get rewarded.
Yeah, as long as you come up with the.
Just got to get it right.
Got to get it right. Yeah.
Personal Ensign, grade one for $600,000, mile and an eighth. You know, only a 5-horse field in here, but it is a powerhouse of a field. Malathat and Clairier coming out of the 1-2 finish in the Shoe V, and Todd was on here earlier and said at the time, he thought, you know, given the warm day of the Shoe V, Malathat looked a little lethargic perhaps in the paddock. I've liked Clairier all along. Latruska off the disappointment in the Ogden Phipps, but the race just before that down at Oaklawn, the Apple Blossom was very good. Will she rebound? Search results, I pulled up the Molly Pitcher from last time. It's going to be number three search results, getting it done for Chad Brown. So again, only five in here, but it's an intriguing addition to the Personal Ensign. What did you think?
Yeah, again, a great race to watch, not so much to bet. Yeah. You're dealing with short prices on horses that don't have to win because there are other horses at short prices that could beat them.
Yeah.
Clairia is probably the horse to beat. This horse couldn't be doing better. She's beaten Malathat two times in a row. She's come back since and held her own, working with Epicenter, gave him all he could handle in her last work. So you know she's on top of her game. Malathat has worked terrific, though, since her last start. She's been working without blinkers. I guess they're going to run her back and give her one more shot with blinkers. They really thought going into the Shoeby that the blinkers might move her forward a little bit. And look, she could have reacted a little bit to that race the time before against Clairier. She went 106 by her down to a 99. But, you know, Todd thought more of the heat than anything else that day. So, you know, a little to choose between them. And then Latruska has just been totally overlooked. I mean, last year at this time, coming into this race, which she did win as the 3-5 favorite. I mean, she was the talk of the town.
Yeah,
nobody
absolutely.
Even has mentioned that she's even here barely, but she's going to be in front as far as she can take them. And we'll see how the track is playing too on Saturday. That could always be a big factor in these kind of races. Will speed be carrying? Will the rail not be so good? We've had some days here, even big stakes days, where the rail, you really didn't want to be down in there and getting that kick back and whatever. So I always urge everybody every day to watch the racetrack, watch the early races, especially on the main track. As we move forward to races like this, it could be a factor.
I thought Latruska won, what, 4 or 5 winning your ins last year. And my question in this race is, I think the most important horse of the race is search results. If she doesn't, well, what happens if she just lets Latruska do her thing and doesn't push her along? I think it makes Latruska's job much easier.
Yeah, I mean, it puts results and Flaming in a bad spot. If you run at her and try to run with her,
that's not going to work against
these
horses.
That's not going to work. I think, you know, their plan is just going
to
be to do what they do. Stalk, let her go, and you know, hope, you know, going a mile and an eighth on this day, you know, you're better than her. So it is an interesting aspect of the race. But from the rail, I mean, Latruska's going to be in front. And it's just a matter of which Latruska we get, the one from her heyday year. You know, at this time last year, it was in the best form of any member of the division. Maybe not so much coming back this year at six, so we'll see.
The Alan Jerkins Grade 1 event, $500,000. Again, just a spectacular stakes card. This one's going to be a lot of fun, too. Gunite, I wasn't buying in necessarily at 7-1 in the Amsterdam. Howling Time comes in here off a fourth-place finish in the Haskell for Dale Romans. But all eyes, I think, are going to be on Jack Christopher. I'm going to go back to the Woody Stevens Jack Christopher, the number one horse here. Subsequently, they try the two turns in the Haskell and wind up third, hence the cutback to the 7 furlongs on Saturday. And I think a lot of people are going to be focusing to see if Jack Christopher bounces back. Intriguing race. What are your thoughts in the Jerkins?
Yeah, I just talked to Chad about Jack Christopher, and he was happy with his Haskell race. I mean, it turned out to be a very good race. I mean, you got Cyberknife coming out of that now, as good as he could be. And Tabor ran second, so it's a couple of pretty tough horses.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, maybe a mile and eighth in two turns is beyond what he wants to do. Right now, they're going to cut him back to 7-8, see how that goes, and then decide moving forward which direction they're going to take. I asked him if necessarily now they're going to put him on a path toward the Breeders' Cup sprint. And he said, nope, we're going to run this race and then, you know, see where we stand after that. But he's definitely going to be the favorite and one to beat on paper. Would I take another short price on him in here? Probably not. He should get a good stalking trip. There is some speed on his inside. Matter of fact, I think the horse on the rail, Conniger, is a very interesting horse here. And again, how the track is playing, how the rail is playing, is going to go a long way. Look, he ran away from Gunite the first time they met, and he's also going to get a big weight switch in his favor between the pairs. So if speed's, you know, running well on the inside, I think you got to take a long look at Conniger. And then, of course, Chad's other horse, Accretive, ran just unbelievably good with one race under his belt to get beat a neck by Gunite in the Amsterdam. Chad's main concern over this is, did it take too much out of him to come back in 4 weeks with only two starts under his belt? You know, naturally you would think a third start he's going to move forward, but, you know, that was a pretty hard race on a lightly raced horse, so it remains to be seen how that's going to work out. And, you know, Gunite, same thing. You know, he ran a buyer that was 13 points higher than the one before it, and he's coming back in 4 weeks too. He's training well, but you know, just hard to predict with some of these horses which ones are going to bounce or regress off of those kind of races and which ones are ready to either repeat or move forward.
Yeah, I think as kind of annually is kind of a fun race there. Sprinters, three-year-old sprinters in here.
I think sometimes it's been the best horse on the day.
Yeah.
On the King's Bishop or the Alan Jerkins.
Yeah.
It's a
great
race.
It is a great race and a good stepping stone for some of these to moving forward in the division and meeting older horses later on in the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Speaking of great race and past winners and whatnot, last year was a spectacular Alan Jerkins with Jackie's Warrior and Life is Good, and Jackie's Warrior now comes back as a four-year-old in the four-go. That's the fifth race on the card on Saturday. $600,000 up for grabs in the Grade 1 event, going seven furlongs, and I pulled up Jackie's Warrior from earlier in the meet, the Alfred G. Vanderbilt. Jackie's Warrior, the number four horse in here, and again, just that past, 5 years or so of the Asmussen Juggernaut Sprinters, Jackie's Warrior is one of those, now riding a four-race win streak, including this Vanderbilt. Baby Yoda, what can you say? 3 for 3 with Baby Yoda, so I can't count the horse out, given the affinity for the racetrack. Cody's Wish also going out for Bill Mott off a couple of triple-digit buyers most recently. Chad Brown has Pipeline in here, triple-digit two races back. It just seems like they're all up against it a little bit with Jackie's Warrior, who's just kind of phenomenal.
The only thing that stuns me more, would stun me more if Jackie's Warrior got beaten here, is the fact that they got six other horses to run against them. I thought this would be a five or four horse field if they got made.
Well, Todd's going down to Charlestown because I think Mind Control was nominated for this, I believe.
Yeah, no, he's going to the Charleston Classic tomorrow. But, you know, what can you say? I mean, this horse wins this race eased up, and he looks like he's the only speed in the air again. Cody's Wish is an intriguing horse, turning back off a couple of nice races, going a mile of the two best races of his career, at least from a buyer standpoint. But, you know, he's at the mercy of the pace, and it doesn't look like there's anything, you know, that's going to push Jackie's Warrior along, assuming Jackie's Warrior breaks. So tough spot there for any of these others in here. Cody's Wish would probably be your second choice and most likely upset. Baby Yoda, I know, is 3 for 3 over the track, but he, too, is at a very big pace disadvantage, and he's really stepping up in class here, facing this guy again. The first time he met him, he got beat a dozen lengths in the True North. I know he didn't get the best trip that day, but, you know, if Jackie's Warrior gets beat, it'll be a real stunner.
It amazes me that Jackie's Warrior has a chance to earn $1 million just sprinting at Saratoga. I mean, which is amazing. The other thought I have, I know it's passé nowadays, but it is the four-go, and if it had been a handicap, where he would have been positioned weight-wise, if you go back to Groovy in the late 80s, he's about the biggest toter of weight in the four-go I can remember.
That's what amazes me, that they got seven horses at allowance weights.
Conditions.
I mean, he carried 127 in the Vanderbilt and just jogged.
Yeah, he gets
He'd probably be 30 in here or 29.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you give him 29 just because, you know, he doesn't scare the trainer as much if you have 29 than 30. But,
and Baby Yoda gets 111.
Yeah, but again, it's just going to be so much fun to watch. It's always fun to watch him run and and watch Steve and his connections' reactions after he wins. I mean, Steve really, really loves this horse.
Yeah,
and why wouldn't you?
So. Baby Yoda, it's such a funny rep. You go down and you look at that 114.
That 114 fire, just sticking out.
Just jumps off the page. And Olympiad, who ran second that day and also had a triple digit, kind of subsequently went on to validate that a little bit, whereas Baby Yoda has run well, but hasn't kind of lived up to that 114.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised somewhere along the line they didn't sneak that down to like a 102.
It is a very funny.
Still stayed at 114.
In that case, that horse in our market, you would not have been able to sneak that down because it has stuck out like such a sore thumb. They'd be like, hey, where'd the 114 go?
I get it.
Where people have just.
But sometimes,
onto.
You know, in retrospect, you feel like maybe it wasn't right.
Yeah.
But it's a hard thing to do to make a change like that.
Mike, I always appreciate the visit. Again, I'll tell people to check out the workout report. Last couple of weeks of the meet, you'll be able to find some gems in there. I guarantee it. So, again, DRF.com. You can also find the coverage of the meet via Mike and Dave Grandigan team at DRF.com as well. Appreciate the visit. And
thank you for the summer.
We'll talk again.
As always, my pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll round it up for this Thursday morning. Stay tuned.
The lineup, they're all set now for the Juvenile Fillies Turf. 14 of them across the track. Heels set on their way. And of the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be Stockman but running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping, Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping, Maria goes on, Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like, Royal Body is running on. Past the eighth ball, they come, stop shopping, Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late, yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop jumping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won at just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill and Anthony Mormino on this Thursday morning. Thanks again to Mike Welch. Thanks earlier to Todd Pletcher. Fun show on this Thursday of Travers
Week. I can't imagine what you have planned for next Thursday, the final one of the year after. Todd Pletcher was great. You know, thank you for his time and a busy schedule. And he's just gave you everything you could want. And Mike, I'm guessing we get Dave next week. So for me, with Mike and everything, that's the last time. And his stuff is just... you know, fantastic.
And I were talking during the break, and great Todd. You know, a guy like Todd with so many horses, very busy. He's over on the Oklahoma side, so to take the cart over here is a ride,
work.
And we appreciate his time. But he's a guy who clearly gets it and is willing to kind of, hey, it advances the game a little bit and go out and kind of promote the game. So we appreciate
it. He was terrific. He wasn't looking at his watch. He was like, I'm good. He's like, we're done. He's like, I'm good. And we appreciate it. Because I told him when he got off, I said, you know, we love it, and I, you know, not going to get into it because my director wants me to say fewer words, but I've known Todd Pletcher for 32 years. I remember when he was holding the shank of Criminal Type. He was a young guy. He was, you know, University of Arizona. I'm an SC guy, and, you know, Wayne was really at his first wave Apex before he won all the Triple Crown races. And, you know, obviously, and I was teasing him because I remember vividly, and he was right, he remembered it, that they put the assistant's name, and it was always Jeff Lucas for years. And then over the winter time, I want to say 30 years ago, Todd Pletcher's name was in the thing, and Harvey had him on his show, and he was a young guy, and he remembered it.
It is great, it right. And also understandable when you ask these guys, you know, the number of wins, the milestone wins with Tommy Amos and Todd Pletcher with over 5,300. Remember the first one? Absolutely.
Yes. And it's, you know, I mean, it's
completely understandable.
It's very understandable.
It's indelibly etched, like, though.
Because also for them, like, they've been working so hard to get that, like, in their career. Not like they've sent out 150 runners under their name, but they're like, you know, I walked hot, assisted, I've done all these things. You know, I'm salivating to take out my own license, hang a shingle, get customers, and put a horse on. So it's like, it's not like it comes, sneaks up around the corner. Oh, I had a winner. You probably 7-8 years been like, you know, you take that shank and you're like, that's it. And I tell you, I haven't seen him yet this meet, which is on me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about the blanket and Bill Mott. And we love the parking spot for Tom Amos. Yeah, I'm like, great. I came home, the guy said, hold on. Runs out.
The motel that they're charging I know one thing.
If you're not aware, Seth and Mick put together usually for Christmas Day the interviews and everything. And Tom Amos will be near the end. He won't be one of the openers. He'll be like, you know, the yearlings come in late, the big ones.
We'll wrap it up here.
Yes.
But I, as I promised, I'm going to show the tape piece about 8 minutes long. So we'll wrap it up, but stay tuned because the TRF piece comes up. Lots of nice interviews, and they do obviously great work. The TRF, it's their big fundraiser every year, the barbecue at the barn out at Saratoga Winery. It was Tuesday night. I went out there, as I say, grabbed a lot of nice interviews, put together about an 8-minute piece. So we'll show that as we move off here. But we'll wrap it up for a Thursday edition of Racing Across America. Tomorrow, back in, Handicappers Report at 9, Racing Across America
also,
10.
Quick note, Travers Day Saturday, it's only 2 days out. 11:35 is first post. We'll be on at 8 o'clock. I mean, a very early day.
Yeah, good note. Because we are early on here on the network on Saturday, obviously, with the early post time. Also wanted to remind you, I didn't mention it earlier, I think you can still go to the website and get tickets, but the BCCA, Belmont Child Care Association, which does great work, the backstretch down in New York and the backstretch up here too, Faith's House and Anna's House, Michael Dubb, Libby Imperio and the team, their big fundraiser is tonight. So it's a dinner at the Preservation Hall downtown, I think, or down in the city. So check out that. As I say, you can type in Belmont Child Care Association, go to their website, and I think you can still get tickets for their event later on today, which is one of their big fundraisers. And it's a relax. It's a lot of fun. So think about that if you're maybe coming up to the track or just looking for a little activity on a Thursday night. All right, we'll wrap it up for this Thursday. Again, back in tomorrow for Handicapper Support at 9 a.m., Racing Across America at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
It is an honor to speak for the horses of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. These horses bring each and every one of us so much joy. Our work is to take care of the Thoroughbred athletes who have finished their racing career and are unable to perform a second athletic career. Sometimes they come off the track and they need to be retired right away. Sometimes they go on to do two or three other careers, polo ponies, show jumpers, dressage horses, cutting horses, but as they reach the end of that career, they need a safe place to land, and that is what we do at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. It is to provide sanctuary to equine athletes when they cannot no longer perform as an athlete. So we do that because it's the right thing to do, but I will tell you, every single person here would tell you, we do it because they give us much, much more than we ever give them, than they ever give us. It is such a joy to be at this event. So talking about this event, our organization is nearly 40 years old. It is entirely here because of the kind donations, the leadership, the support, the enthusiasm of countless individuals who have donated, who have supported us, who have told our story. That's a lot of people. And on a day like today, we actually get to get a lot of those people together in one place. And it is simply magical. We have definitely proven tonight that the love we have for these horses and the joy we find in being together is not going to be deterred by any matter of monsoon-like Saratoga summer storm, including hail, sideways rain, and dark clouds. And maybe that's why tonight is maybe more fun than any other barbecue. We always think we're having the best time. But today, you look around the crowd and you see people who love these horses, who give to these horses, and love to come together to celebrate that very fact. So the TRF barbecue at the barn, I may be a little damper than I usually am at this point in the barbecue, but my heart is so full of thanks to everyone who's here tonight. Every one of our volunteers, our hardworking staff, our incredible sponsors, everyone who donated to raffle baskets and silent auction. This is a celebration of the horses and all of us who love them.
Why don't you come over, just dive through on me? Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Valerie.
Oh. Well, the purpose of the TRF, our mission statement, is to rescue thoroughbreds that can no longer compete at the racetrack from abuse, neglect, and even slaughter. And events like that, like we have tonight, are critical to our mission because we have 450 horses in our herd, and anybody that owns a horse knows how much a horse can eat. It's very expensive to keep a horse. So with 450 horses, of course, our vet and feed and farrier bills and hay bills are very high. So events like this help to pay for all those expenses. So we do appreciate when people come out and support the TRF so we can feed our 450 horses.
Now, there's no question about it. I've been involved back several years ago. There was a task force on retired racehorses, and I was a member of that. And we made a lot of recommendations. One of the biggest recommendations was every owner, trainer had to look at a video about 15 minutes on horse racing aftercare. That was the best achievement, I think, of that group. And Saratoga Stable historically has been a big supporter. Old Friends is one of ours, and Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation is another.
I mean, it's so important that these horses go on to have a second career or somewhere to go after they're finished on the track. You know, they give us everything in the mornings and the afternoons through the young part of their lives, but a lot of people don't realize that these horses live to be 25, 30 years old. And they, you know, in the state of New York, you can't run until after the age of 10. So they need somewhere to go, and they, a lot of them need a second career as well. TRF is very, very close to mine and Maggie's heart. Maggie actually sits on the board. But there's some wonderful organizations out there like Rerun, etc. as well, who do a fabulous job, and it's very, very important that these horses have a safe place to go.
So as we celebrate our work and we bring people together tonight, it is especially opportune to really celebrate our flagship program, which is the TRF Second Chances Program. When our first horse got off the band in 1984, he stepped off the band at a prison in upstate New York called the Wallkill Correctional Facility. His name was Promised Road. Now, for nearly 40 years, that program has been running. And what has been happening there is we've been saving horses and they've been changing lives. And that is made possible in partnership with the New York Department of Corrections and Community Supervision. What an honor to have Acting Commissioner Anthony Annucci here, his whole leadership team, to celebrate with us, to spend time with us, and to all join together in celebrating the farm managers at the two programs in New York who are taking care of our horses and changing lives along the way. So it's really very special to have them with us and to have everyone get to meet them tonight.
This is a wonderful program. It's a wonderful partnership. It goes back almost 40 years now. Started at Wallkill, recently expanded to Wyoming Correctional Facility. And it's just a way for individuals who are incarcerated, who made a mistake, to really give back something meaningful to humanity. and they learn a lot about themselves taking care of horses. I happen to have horses in my own barn. I know what it is to care for these animals, and certainly the thoroughbreds who have given so much to us racing and working hard deserve to be treated royally in their retirement. And so these incarcerated individuals learn to love them, they learn to have confidence, they learn to give something back to humanity, feel good about themselves, and just really feel that they have to be proud of giving something to society.
So I've been around with the New York State Department of Corrections for 4.5 years. I'm the vocational instructor for the Department of Corrections, and I'm the farm manager for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation at Walk Hill Correctional Facility. That's been around since 1984, and we are going to be celebrating our 40th anniversary in 2 years. That's 2024, that we will be celebrating 40 years at Walk Hill Correctional Facility.
You know, the thing about thoroughbred aftercare is it's somewhat new to the industry because the industry is hundreds of years old. Thoroughbred aftercare has become a real priority in, I would say, the last 20 years, but the TRF has been around for almost 40 years, so they've been doing it for a really long time. And I think that everybody involved with the industry at this point is starting to realize that when you are thinking about donating to thoroughbred aftercare, if you make a living in this industry, it's not a donation, it's an obligation. And the TRF does such a great job with their herd, with managing their herd, and they take the horses that other people don't want because you can't ride them, and they find a way for those horses to have a really good life. And so it's important for thoroughbred aftercare all over and all across the board, but I especially love what the TRF does.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pennell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pennell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
fun. That's fun.
So tell us, what does Monaco Leisure do?
So basically, we range from theme parks to arcades to pubs to restaurants and all that sort of stuff, allocating to everyone's needs and all that sort of stuff. We're the top of Canvey Island at the minute, so it's worth coming down and giving us a try.
All those, I mean, you must work 24 hours a day.
I'll try and get a couple hours off for some sleep, yeah. But that's about it, really. But my dad cracks the whip on me, so at the end of the day, I'll do it for him. Keeps him happy, keeps him off my back, and everyone's happy, so that's good.
What has business been like over the past few months?
Well, I was amazed by the... I've only looked after the account for, like, 6 months, but I was amazed how much volume and beer and everything they sell down there, and the operations got there, they don't mess about. If it's about doing that bar or that bar, and entertainment-wise, it's actually fantastic. So credit to the guys. I didn't actually realise. I've been around for like 30 years.
Yeah.
I didn't realise how busy they were.
What's the name of the family you are?
We're the Greys.
Well done, the Greys of Essex. I love it, the Greys of Essex. Well done. Keep up the good work.